When we think of the word freedom, what are we really thinking about? Are we thinking about a series of rights that's given to us by some sort of government institution or some sort of document? Are we thinking about our ability to do things? Are we thinking about where we're going to go in our lives? A lot of people think about freedom as in things that are given to us, rights, the Bill of Rights, the right to bear arms, the right to free speech. But a lot of times we don't think about freedom in its truest sense. Freedom in terms of what we're allowing ourselves to do. You know, I was in the fitness industry for a very long time. And when I opened my eyes and looked at the fitness industry for what it was, what I saw was a quest for an image, a quest for abs, a quest to lift a certain amount of weight, maybe to lose a few pounds so you look better in the mirror or you can fit into a certain article of clothing. But I think all that really misses the point. You know, in my mind, when we think about fitness or any other real, true human endeavor, we're actually thinking about freedom. Because true fitness also brings with it freedom and is basically an insurance policy for your freedom through the rest of your life. You know, when you think about when you hit a certain age and maybe you're having a harder time walking up a hill, or maybe you're having a harder time lifting up your children, or maybe you just don't want to go out anymore because you're just tired. These are self-imposed chains because, as with any type of freedom, our fitness has to be vigilantly guarded. We have to constantly put ourselves in the position where we are going to preserve those things that we love to do. Taking care of yourself, taking care of your body, seeing to your own fitness, those in my mind are some of the truest acts of preserving freedom. And yet so many people let them go. Today, we're going to have Joey Martinez from the Devil Doc Talk Show on. Joey was a Navy corpsman who served with the Fleet Marine Force. And he's on his own quest for freedom in more ways than one. After suffering some injuries, he's on a quest to get himself back on a path where he can do the things he loves. And he's also on a quest to give other people more freedom through allowing them to be able to follow their dreams in the recording world. So, Joey, I want to thank you for coming on today. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, howdy there. My name's Joey Martinez. Like Chris said, I was an FMF corpsman for 7 years, 3 months. Before I really sat down, and I would say it was 6 months before I got out that I really pursued getting help for PTSD and TBIs, as well as neuropathic and neurologic injuries that I have throughout my body that cause falls and 10 out of 10 pain for the majority of my days. Mm-hmm. So when I stumbled upon your fitness program, and we had a conversation on the show, the hashtag DDTS with Warrior Soul Apparel, we had a very great connection where I was able to not just re-identify myself, but really reconnect with something that I lost. Something that I lost while I was asking for help that I forgot I had in me. You know, something, a tool that I had, a passion, a light, a fire, whatever you want to call it, a flame that really helped me ever since I was a kid, which was physical exercise and activities, getting out hiking, fishing, you name it, whether it be actual weightlifting or not, you know, a lot of guys are coming out, like myself, with a lot of limitations where we're not able to hit the weights like we used to, and sometimes that feeds into our depression. Like for me, that was one of my biggest depressing things, was going from benching 425 for a set of two, leg pressing, you know, 1,200 pounds like it was nothing, dead pressing or deadlifting, you're close to 500 pounds. You know, I was a big monster. I really, really loved exercising. And, you know, it's something that me and my buddy discovered in Iraq that really helped with stress levels. Really helped me balance myself better. However, when I asked for help, it was kind of a detriment, because when somebody sees a physically fit individual, like you were saying, fitness can be a key to bridging that transition. However, mine, it was more like a gate for people that they thought, well, look how fit or big and tough he looks. You know, there's nothing wrong with this guy. So I ran into a lot of mental blocks to get into the gym after that. Like, well, you know, I'm in so much pain while I'm in the gym, you know, and it's not going to benefit me. They're just going to use it against me, you know. And so it got to the point where I stopped going completely, and I didn't realize it, but it was the most detrimental thing I could have ever done for my body. Like the one saying, it's called, I actually don't know who said it, maybe Confucius, maybe not, but either way, a rock in motion gathers no moss, right? And that's exactly where I'm at. Even though I'm only about to turn 31 next week, I'm going, you know, my body isn't, my doctor said it perfectly, Dr. Miller, wonderful woman. She said, it's not about the year, okay? It's all about the mileage. Mm-hmm. And she looked at me and goes, and your mileage, son? Let me tell you. And I was like, thanks. And my Carfax is all fucked up, too. It's all messed up. And, you know, I take it with a grain of salt, because after meeting you and talking about Warrior Soul and DDTS and getting back on the exercise and not necessarily where I used to be. And, you know, that's exactly what guys and girls and people with limitations on both sides, the people that are helping and the people that are needing help, need to understand. They're not going to be able to pick up where they left off. And that's where I'm at, you know, adjusting, accepting, growing, and really just enjoying and loving the journey of getting back into it. Like when we first started the program, I think it was in January or February, where you put me on, let's say, a very slow pace. And I know it's slow pace, but even for me, it's really strenuous. It's still getting great results. And I'm going, holy crap, dude. Like, if I had this, you know, when I first got out of the military, or if I could have recommended this to my higher-ups while I was in, you know, just different ideas and concepts could definitely avoid things for different people at different times right now, because everybody has their own path, their own transition. Mm-hmm. And right now, I guarantee you there's somebody almost in the exact same circumstance I was when I got out that could benefit from something like Warrior Soul Apparel, Warrior Soul Fitness, and everything else you got coming, Chris. It's just really awesome.
Well, dude, thank you so much for that. And you know, I truly, truly appreciate that. And I'm definitely trying to publish some more programs for the guys, put some stuff out there and make sure that that people know about some of the stuff we were doing. Tell us a little bit about your injuries and how they happened. What types of pain were you dealing with? What types of obstacles were you dealing with, you know, both in the military and in your transition?
All right, no problem. When I was in, I didn't have any direct contact injuries, like, you know, your IED blasts, mm-hmm. your gunshot wounds, your heavy explosive exposures, like where you're going to get massive TBIs. I was more like the guy that I really just ran in head first in everything that I did. So I was bound to slip, fall, get caught up in something eventually. And I was always the guy that slipped and fell. I was always the guy that got caught up in something, mm-hmm. in training or in actual deployments. And I'd be the first one to say, you know, I'm not a clumsy man, but I did do some stupid things without really thinking it through, causing myself personal injuries. Like, you know, jumping off the back of a 710 fully loaded. Not what I'd recommend, okay, especially at the beginning of a deployment.
Not good for the back,
your
no.
Knee goes, yeah. And my back was already messed up, too. Mm-hmm. So it's like at the beginning, it was more I was too gung-ho, and I just didn't care. You know, I grew up in a wrestling mentality, a wrestling town. You know, I bear down, and I go for grit. You know, no matter what I do, I'm going as hard as I can and as far as I can. Well, that was my mistake. When I first joined, I slipped the disc during some kind of simple training in North Carolina. And then throughout the years, it got degraded, or degenerative disc disease is what it's called. What that caused was a neuropathic impingement in my lower bundle on my L's, in my L region of my spinal columns. And I'm talking about it like a car, because I do think of the body like a vehicle. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening was the deterioration of both the nerve and discs throughout the years. This was back in 2005 when I started getting seen. So that's a little over 10 years now of degradation, degeneration, impact, and all the other stuff. And I didn't get out until 2011. So all the humping, all the staying in shape, all the extra stuff that I was trying to do, I was really looking forward to doing a billet where I'm – as a corpsman, I'd be doing a lot more with a specialized unit. And that's really what I wanted to do. I was really about human optimization and the military and all the other good stuff. But the injuries that I did not pay attention to, not as much as my back or my knees or my shoulders and neck, you know, which all are bust up, but whatever, was the MTBIs that, you know, I bumped my noggin a bunch of times on just about anything I was training with. The little helicopter that spins up, smack. You know, if you're in the back of a 7-ton or back of an ambulance, I'm getting hit in the head. It's just my thing. It's like my magnetic head is drawn to something that's going to hit it. And what ended up happening with just that is the doctors didn't catch it after I was exposed to a blast injury during training, and I was dazed. And then as I, you know, keep going on throughout my military career, we were exposed to a bunch of large blasts, you know, controlled detonations and stuff like that. Nothing major, but the falls and bumps and that on top of it, what I learned when I was working at a research facility in San Diego was that there's actual micro injuries to blast wave injuries. And actually, they're just talking about this now, which is very interesting, because this is stuff that me and my doctors were working on back in 2007, mm-hmm. was the understanding, diagnosis, and exploration of microvascular injuries into the cerebral neuro matter, or however, I don't know how they worded it. But the fact was the air concussive waves penetrate through both the meaty tissue and the skull tissue and create a ripple within the brain, right, that can cause a contusion or an abrasion. It's the ones where the cells just rupture because of a pressure wave on the microvasculature. So we're talking about capillaries, okay? Like very teeny tiny little things in your brain that nobody's really thinking of, because we have tons of it, right? Well, what if you get smacked in your own noggin, right? Mm-hmm. And in that little buster was your personality. We don't know where anything in the brain is, really, okay? We have a general idea where, you know, how things are firing while you're utilizing it. But it's really unique, because this is the study that saved my life. And I say a lot of things saved my life because I've had a lot of things almost end it. Mm-hmm. So when I say it, I really mean it. What I learned with that study was if you lose those clusters, it could be gone forever. If you notice a personality change or a slight persona change where you can tell your service members not the same person they were, you know, that's a very big key to the study that people are now noticing blast injuries can be both treated neuropathically, compassionately, where there could be slight medication use, but more therapeutic reconnection, where, like I was saying, I'd forget stuff, and I don't know why I'd forget stuff. It's the things that I do almost every day, right? However, the injuries, the doctors were now telling me, because of the mileage on my old engine, they go, hey, you're not going to be able to recall things the way you used to. And to me, that was very detrimental. However, as things progressed, I worked on it. I started doing hand-to-mind remapping, where I would play with something on my left side of my brain while thinking or reading on math subjects or social studies. Mm-hmm. I would go back on stuff that I know and rewrite it with my left hand, or rewrite it with my right hand, or rewrite it both ways. I would do flashcards with just, you know, your regular cards, trying to get the ace of spades, try to get the ten of spades, you know, trying to figure out what it is, where it is, and do some more mental recall, you know, get that brain moving. There's the actual one app that helped a lot during this transition. I can't remember. They were advertising the heck out of it a few years ago, where it's like an exercise for your brain, right?
Yep, yep. I've seen those around.
Right. Yeah, and it really helped, because what I noticed was when I exercised my brain, when I exercised my body, I could manage both my depression. It's not gone, but I can manage it better. I can manage my pain levels better. Again, it's not gone, but my sense of humor is at least there, because I'm reading stuff, I'm feeling better, like I'm growing, like I'm, you know, like I'm doing something productive, and it really feeds into that serotonin receptor, that adrenal whole system of depression and anxiety, and it really calms and soothes it in a simplistic way, where, you know, really enacts the sympathetic system to go, hey, dude, relax, you know, and yeah. When a guy has or a girl has PTSD, and I really love using the comparison here. If a guy or a girl has PTSD for trauma, we really can't differentiate, okay?
Right.
If it's a rape victim, if it's sexual assault victim, if it's a car accident, if it's an explosion, if it's pure negligence, because I have geriatric patients that ended up having PTSD for going and getting help at the geriatric places, you know, because they were abused and neglected.
Mm-hmm.
So what ended up happening by 2011, when I was on my way out, was I was neglected severely. It fed into all my negative biases. It fed into all my negative ideas and concepts of the military at the time. And it really destroyed my fundamental foundation on who am I and what am I doing on this planet?
Yeah.
Without that, dude, oh my God, PTSD ate my soul up. The TBI shit made me so I couldn't remember. And then the doctors pretty much said there's no hope, like at all. That was what they told my wife and my kids. Like, we went to appointment after appointment. I had 22 different prescriptions, 9 different doctors at one point, and it was nothing. Nothing was doing anything. And in fact, I was looking straight into the ground going, I'm going to die, and this is for real, because the doctor sat me down and said, look, in 2013, this was a couple years after I got out, after I got established, you know, about my VA stuff, after going homeless and bankrupt. And no, this was actually right before we went homeless and bankrupt, right, December 2013. The doctor goes, look, you could possibly have stomach cancer, brain tumor, and more than likely because of the degeneration of your discs and the neuropathy and the different types of pains you have, you're not going to be able to avoid a wheelchair. And I was like, crushed. You know, I'm trying to live a life, you know, try and learn, try and grow. And every physician I go to tells me there's literally no hope. Like, I don't know why you're so happy, kid. And they tell me this. Like, my doctor actually had to sit me down and say, look, you are friggin' concerning me, sir.
Wow.
Because I would laugh it off. I would laugh it off. And I still do. Because I know for a fact I don't care if I end up in a wheelchair or whatever. Because I got to do what I wanted to do. I put my body out there. I put my mind out there. My soul out there. Just like a vehicle, a race vehicle. You know, if you crash your race vehicle, you're not going to mope about it. I mean, if you survive it, you're not going to mope about it, hopefully. And eventually, hopefully, you get it back on the track. I mean, that may not be, you know, actual, you know, racing track, or maybe I can be out there on the pits, you know, changing a tire. There's no end. There's no give up. There's no stop. And that's what I really love about your program and the approach of spirituality, the approach of owning and accepting what has occurred to you. Mm-hmm. Because until I did that, there was no hope, right? Doctors said there's no hope. There's no hope. They're my current authority figure, right? At that time, being a corpsman, you listen to your doctor, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm going to do my own research and shit. And I did. And yeah, you know, I learned a bunch of different things with a bunch of different medicinal compounds and different therapies, like transcendental meditation, utilizing the show. Oh my goodness, utilizing the show to capture things that people are afraid of expressing was the most therapeutic thing for me. And I would say for our community as a whole, because nobody's going there for us.
Absolutely.
Nobody on the ABC, CNN, Fox News stuff is going to allow a guy to vent and to say, what's actually on your mind, bro? What hurts? Is it really depressing that you can't serve in the military anymore? Millions of people are going to say, no way. And I'm going to say, for me being the type of guy I am, yes, it is actually really depressing to admit I'm broken, can't function, and I need help. And I would say, dude, with the type of training program that you have, right, with Warrior Soul Fitness, with the way you implement it, with the history you have and both your successes with all the celebrities that you've got and trained up and shit, mm-hmm. not only that, but with the military dudes and myself, you know, I'll speak highly of it day in, day out until I die for two reasons. I grew up respecting the body, the mind, and the soul, okay? That's exactly what we need to incorporate to get people back on track on any kind of level. But the second thing was you take the time to make sure they're following through with the program. Even me, where I'm really hard to keep track of anything. You know, my brain's going one way. I'm trying to do the show with this. I'm raising two kids. I got a wife, you know, but she's my home care provider, so it really helps mm-hmm. With the daily activity stuff. But as far as motivation, to do a couple pull-ups, to do my push-ups and sit-ups, or to do my Tai Chi and yoga stretches, to do my TM, transcendental meditation, to make sure I'm taking my coconut oil at the right time, getting my fuel in at the right time, you know, that's something that helps me rekindle that flame that I once had in a special way, where now I understand and accept it with mm-hmm. new limitations. Again, it's kind of like a vehicle. If you keep running down the road with no tires, you're going to ruin it.
Yeah, dude.
You know, you're going to run up and start putting new tires on them.
One of the things you said there, because we have another guest that I've been talking to. His name's Andrew Marr, and he's from the mm-hmm. Warrior Angels Foundation. Have you ever heard of Dr. Mark Gordon?
No.
So one of the things you said there was, you know, these mini, I guess, insults to your brain where, you know, you're getting bopped in the head or you're experiencing concussions from blasts and things like that. Andrew was a special forces operator and his job, in the special forces was as a breacher. And so he was constantly dealing with explosives on a daily basis, multiple times a day. Over a long period of time. And one of the things they found was that even though he'd never been experienced an IED blast, even though he hadn't been blown up, he was experiencing the symptoms of traumatic brain injury through that ripple exactly. effect that you're talking about. Now, one of the things that happens there is, you know, those tiny contusions that you're speaking of, that introduces brain inflammation. And when you get inflammation exactly. in the brain, it affects the whole body. It affects your mood. It can introduce symptoms that look like post-traumatic stress.
Yes, because you start getting those cortisol pumps going. Your brain doesn't know what the hell's going on.
Exactly.
Your body's literally firing everything to figure it out. It's as if you were hit by a ghost.
Okay? Right.
And
right.
For some reason, your brain registered it, but everything else didn't, and you got to go find him.
Right.
And for medical to even come out and finally say microvasculature neurologic injuries, okay, are not only 100% real, they're avoidable, okay, and they're treatable. However, it's a very, very precious window of opportunity that we have in the treatment spectrum. Because, again, like in the field, you get this golden hour, and now it's the golden 30 minutes or whatever the fuck, right? With head injury, if you're being continuously exposed to blasts, it's normal. That's your job. That's what you do. You're a breather. And Jesus Christ. And I pray for those guys because I know that sometimes you do got to use a little extra on a door.
Right. No, exactly. The entire thing.
And then when you're going in, oh man, these guys are being totally exposed to that type of stuff.
Yeah, dude. One of the things they found was that, so he went in for a hormone panel and what they found was that, you know, his testosterone levels were way down, right? And cortisol was way up and you know, he was experiencing, you know, what they call a pregnenolone steal. And so that was screwing with him. But what they found was that your hormones, your nuts are not the only thing that produce testosterone in your body. Right, your testicles are not the only thing that produces testosterone in your body. Your brain is responsible for a lot of hormone production. And so one of the things that they've been doing with the Warrior Angels Foundation is taking people who've been dealing with traumatic brain injury, and they've been doing testosterone therapy, but not just like testosterone cypionate. They have a special mix of testosterone that really absorbs into the brain. And if you talk to Andrew was, I mean, he went from being a special forces operator to somebody who could fall, you know, just walking around. He was losing his coordination. He was losing his ability to walk. He was losing a whole bunch of different things. And
it's sad, dude. It is so, so sad. And to me, it was the same shit. I started falling for no goddamn reason.
Right.
And I remember I'd go out and walk down a flight of stairs, normal, right? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, one day, I'll miss a fucking step, and I'm going down the flight of stairs, dude.
Dude, and it's crazy how much these hormones could affect you. Once he started getting the therapy, everything changed. Today, he's running the Warrior Angels Foundation, which gets this type of care to veterans for free. And doesn't require a history of TBI on the SRB. You basically have to show your DD214, and if there's a possibility you have TBI, they give you the therapy. But they send you for a blood test. You get the blood test back. He got on this therapy, and today he's competing as a shot putter. He's competing as a discus thrower, and he's in a Stanford University School of Business for Veterans. Earning his MBA. And, you know, whereas like a few years ago, he wouldn't have been able to do this because of the concentration. So he's a dude I really want to connect you with, because I think that you could benefit from what they're doing down there so much, because it's really remarkable what they are doing. And they're recording everything and they're doing empirical studies. And what they're doing right now is that they're on a path to start to get congressional reviews of this. So because his goal as a charity is to not exist anymore. He wants the VA doing this stuff. And I think that's amazing. So his goal, I mean, within a few years to have congressional hearings and things like that. So.
Dude, that is so absolutely wonderful because in fact, when I was in the military, that's exactly what I was looking at was, not the hormone therapy behind it yet, because it was more like I was very intrigued to special operations, but not on the aspect of cool guy shit, okay? Mm-hmm. And I always like to clarify it. On the aspect of human optimization and medical – what's the word I want to word here? Pretty much make them not Superman or Captain America, but damn near it, because – I started doing a lot of research in Iraq, okay, on hormones and basic metabolic function and all this wonderful shit, even, you know, eating for your right blood type, blahzy, blahzy, whatever, sports nutrition, yeah, whatever. Okay, you probably know way more than I do. But what I learned was in lab tech school was the specific ways certain carbohydrates, proteins, and all this wonderful stuff breaks down. The importance of luteinizing hormones, and that's where you're talking about the brain thing, the pituitary, the adrenals, and all the different stuff. Gall, I think, actually releases a lot of things that are important to insulin, which is very important to growth hormone, very important to testosterone. I had to learn all these different qualitative and quantitative measurements for human optimization in lab tech school. So when I got out of lab tech school and created a medical laboratory facility in NAFL Centro, and I was seeing all these different types of guys, pilots, Blue Angels, SAS, SEALs, grunts from you name it and wherever, you know, everybody. And that's when I got really turned on to the human optimization and nutrition utilization, because what I learned was you could do all this stuff in those communities and all the other communities and sports and all that, you know. There's a lot of different hormonal experimenting going on, and there always has been. Mm-hmm. I was never part of it, and I make sure that everybody knows, though, that I don't think, because this is always a good question that people ask SEALs a lot and grunts a lot, you know, the steroid use in military. And I go, even GNC stuff actually is causing problems in the eyes of physicians in the military. And I'm going, you know, I doubt it. Yeah, I really, really, really doubt it. When I actually got tested for my hormone levels, they said, dude, you're like an 83-year-old man. Your testosterone's at 23. Mm-hmm. I was like, what? What do you mean? They go, dude, it's like non-existent. Like, your balls don't work. And well, I'm like, oh, okay.
Dude, you have to think about that in context for a second. You know, over your time in the fleet, you know, you're not getting a lot of sleep. You're under stressful situations. Exactly. You're producing shit tons of cortisol because you're constantly being put in that situation where you have to produce cortisol to do your job. And you're eating MREs, which are full of sugar. They're full of nutrient-stealing types of nutrition. Now, if you're active in the military, I'm not saying don't do your job and don't eat MREs. What I'm saying is that there needs to be some things out there that help people to prevent and protect for when they get to be 31. And they're trying to settle down with their wife and kids, and they're trying to settle down to a calmer state. You know, there has to be something there while these kids are young to take care of them. And that's the beauty of that is that some of the stuff that Dr. Mark Gordon was talking about. For instance, if you take, I have this supplement here, it's called N-acetylcysteine, and that increases the cellular presence of glutathione, which helps cells to turn over. That can help your internal organs. It could also help to reduce brain inflammation. And it's not expensive. It's really cheap. And that's stuff that they're doing there at the Warrior Angels Foundation. And it's something simple people could take in the fleet and in Army infantry and in all the combat arms, to prevent stuff like this from happening in the first place, you know?
Exactly. Preventive measures. And in fact, here's a funny thing that I actually really got to do, and you know, I'm not going to extrapolate on it because it is sensitive material, not necessarily like Hillary Clinton's sensitive, okay? Mm. In the sense of people don't really talk about how diverse the military research programs get, and it's exactly where your friends are. I'm sorry, Andrew's going, and the whole. Sorry, say it again. Angels Foundation?
The Warrior Angels Foundation, yeah.
Warrior Angels Foundation, all right? Look at what they're doing with hormone balance and then build on it, right? Preventive measures. You know, I find it a very, very, very detrimental because I saw so many older gentlemen in these specialized units. And I don't mean older in a sense of old, okay? I mean 30, 35,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
40. 45, holy fuck, bro, what are you still doing here? You know?
Yeah.
You know, I had a retired master chief from a SEAL unit out in San Diego, and I was doing his workups for his retirement, you know, getting him ready to get out and double-check his medical record, making sure he's good to go, making sure he gets everything checked out. And that's something, too, that has to go into this stuff, is people have to learn how to take care of themselves. To the point where they understand what to say and how to communicate with their physicians. And a lot of people aren't trying to do that. They're scared of it. Like admitting that you might have some testosterone issues could be a real problem in that community. Because of the egotistical crap that goes with testosterone levels, balls and dicks and whatever else you want to say. But the fun fact of it is health and benefit, okay? If we can get a preventive measure implemented, just like we do inoculations. We do anti-malarial drugs that are now being found out to not be good for us. We've done that for years. So why don't we start looking and utilizing human optimization? You know, use kinesiology, physiology. Utilize all these nutrition tactics that people are discovering, research scientists are improving upon each year. Implement that into our MRA utilization. You know, implement that in our daily training. They're moving over from the mile and 2 mile courses, 3 mile courses to actual physical functional tests, you know, mm-hmm. where all of this wonderful crap we're talking about, hopefully, and I do really pray, because I don't want a young man to make the same mistakes I made or the same mistakes Andrew made or you made and destroy the vehicle that they have literally for the rest of their life by undermining some basic functional crap that we could be giving our service members as tools. And then as things occur, you know, really implementing the medical standard that we both know exists and should be implemented for our United States sailors, our Marines, our soldiers, our Coasties, our Air Force Guardsmen, every single one of them. And I even want to expand that to our police officers and our FBI agents, our CIA agents. All of our agents in the government need to be on a medical program so we can have a sustainment of personnel. Well, look at it this way. Do you know how much the United States government pays each year in disability?
Not sure.
Me either. But I guarantee you it's hundreds of billions of dollars, okay?
No, absolutely.
And they actually have tactics now where they're trying to reduce by bureaucratic measures, not by implementing any kind of actual work. I mean, look at the VA backlog and all this stuff. Their trick is to change their guidelines. So by definition of the technicality of the bureaucratic guidelines, they now fall in underline in this bullshit that they're saying they're doing something good. Now, I'm all for whatever, you know, cooking the books. That's wonderful if you are, you know, in financing. I don't care. But when you're talking about human health, that could literally lead to sentinel vent, right? What is a sentinel vent? Where you can cause the death of a patient simply by ignoring or not getting the right care at the right time. And it could be hormone balance. It could be TBI treatment. It could be PTSD treatment. It could be physical health and nutrition. And the best part, if it is physical health and nutrition, right, we're talking about preventive measures. You know, one of our FMS sayings in the field and both at home, the best preventive medicine is sometimes an offense, okay?
Yep.
And it's very, very important. Because as a corpsman, I would always preach to my guys, take care of your feet, hydrate, make sure you come to me no matter what, okay? Yeah. I don't care if you've done the worst things in the world, if you think you're the most heinous person in the world, I don't care. You can come to me, you can talk to me, I got my office open no matter what. Hey, I'll close the door if we need to. I can even put on music to calm you down before you talk. That was one of my primary things when I was in, make sure my Marines, make sure anybody that comes to me, whether it be a specialized unit dude or some, you know, Blue Angel guy or whoever, it could be the Command Master Chief, I don't care. It could be the Admiral, okay, because I had plenty of conversations with the CEOs of all the commands I've been to. It's simple, all right? We get to communicate on another level as corpsmen with people, and I'm telling you right now, things like that with the Warrior Angels Foundation, what they're doing, dude, just trying to implement some kind of congressional hearing on it, just trying to get people to actually put a stamp and date on their findings. Dude, that is so huge that you let them know, hey, I'll keep talking for hours if you need to be. I'll push that stuff all throughout San Diego, like we were talking earlier about, you know, public speaking, consultant stuff, working the whole coastline all the way up and down, and I'm way open to making sure that something like that's implemented into a service, whether it be Army or Navy or Air Force, because those are the only branches that have their own medical. So,
absolutely, you know, absolutely.
It's big, dude.
I'm definitely going to be putting you in touch with Andrew, and I think you guys could have some good conversations, and I think that that Dr. Mark Gordon could definitely help you out. And I think that, you know, and I'll put the website I'll send you the website. Basically, like I said, their website's open. Anybody can send an application in. You just have to have a DD214. You know, they'll take a look at your blood work. They'll see what you need and that sort of thing. So, and what they're really looking for now is data points to show the success, you know. For you, man, you know, you know, we talked a little bit about you getting into your exercise program, you getting back into the gym. You know, we know you have back problems. We know you're going through a lot of pain right now. Tell me about what you're trying to do right now, what you're trying to implement right now in your life, in order to achieve more of that optimum state. Because I think a lot of guys out there, they make the mistake of saying, oh, I want to be normal. I just want to live a normal life. I want to feel normal. And to some extent, yeah, man, that's like when you're in pain, when you feel like your body's breaking down, that's a big thing. But you're trying to go above and beyond that, and you're trying to really excel here and live your best life. What are you doing, bro?
So for me, what I do, and you're right in saying that, for a lot of guys, they pop their own tires and, I mean that in the best sense, okay? It's called overambition. The expectations are outrageous. It's foolish optimism, okay? Mm-hmm. And a great book is called A Man's Search for Meaning, An Introduction to Logotherapy. All right, and it really will help any guy that has big ambitions or no ambitions and wants to live just a normal life, like you were saying, or find some normalcy in there, and dude, we can't call ourselves normal. To establish something that you feel is acceptable to you, that's normal. Okay, mm-hmm. For me, it's being overambitious and not being foolish with that ambition, or being foolishly optimistic. And what I find is transcendental meditation works the best. If I don't sleep, like last night, I didn't sleep at all, like, and the night before, but that's not. You know,
describe transcendental meditation for us. What is it? How do you get into that state? What do you do, and where can you know? How do you learn how to do that?
Well, there's actually a bunch of resources online. You can find out on YouTube. They give you a very great. I forgot which one. You go on YouTube and you can look just transcendental meditation. Okay, any one of those links, they're usually going to be somewhat decent and guide you down the right path. What I highly recommend is finding the one that somebody has some kind of natural draw to. So if it's a hot-looking girl and you're naturally drawn to watching hot-looking girls on YouTube, watch it because you're going to pay attention more. If it's some pretentious redheaded dude acting silly, don't watch it because you really want to pay attention to what they're saying.
You got something against redheads, brother?
Nah, you know.
I'm just kidding.
No, but... My best friend's a redhead, dude. I always got to dig them out anytime I can. Oh, their lives aren't hard enough, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, so about the TM, right? Mm-hmm. What I really enjoy and I focus on, and I also consult my guys on my brain, still to this day, believe it or not, we sit down and I tell them, don't think about anything. And usually that's when you see a conniption happen or some form of aneurysm, right? What do you mean don't think of anything? What I like to tell them is to think of their favorite color, right? And it's kind of like a hypnotic state, really, technically, if you want to diagnose it and look at it under brain wave measurer stuff, it's basically a hypnotic transcendental state, okay? The reason why you want to be in a area where you can feel relax. Okay, this is important. It could be in the middle of the street. It could be out in a park. When I say middle of the street, I don't mean in the middle of the fucking street. I mean, you know, wherever at safety, okay? Mm-hmm. You can go to a beach. You can go inside a closet where it's absolute quiet, or you can sit in your truck and do it. Like, I do it a lot in my truck where, you know, I'm driving from one point to another. I'm not doing it while I'm driving, but when I finally have to regather myself, before I exit my vehicle, I work my TM. Mm-hmm. I practice my tone. You can find a tone that works for you. Mine is a tone of A where you're just like, and then I relax and I start humming that same tone. And what I do is I enjoy feeling the vibration through my teeth up to the frontal lobe of my face and brain. So what you do is you just stick your tongue right between your teeth and you sing the same note. And you lightly, don't bite on your tongue hard, but what you feel is a slight vibration. And then, as soon as they feel that vibration, they go, what the fuck? Right? And for a Marine, it could be really awkward because, one, you're telling a guy to get really in touch with himself other than masturbation. And he's like, what are you talking about, Doc? And you're going, relax, watch, just take a bunch of deep breaths. And you have to focus on the breathing because just like in Tai Chi and yoga, that's really what we're trying to draw in is some good oxygen down into those deep bronchial areas, into the lung, and get it all cleared out. And that's really where we're getting that transference of energy, of oxygen into the blood cells. We're getting that toxic waste out by taking these good deep breaths. And as soon as you start focusing on just taking a deep breath in that light tone, right, all that good stuff, before you know it, you're not thinking about anything. Mm-hmm. You can think about something now. What do you want to think of? Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to think about how in the heck am I going to land this damn job? Okay, how am I going to get this gig? How am I going to get this consultant gig? How am I going to get this price up on my salary? Like I talked to a bunch of guys, you know, they're really trying to get reintegrated. How am I going to get through the nerves, the anxiety? Try TM. Mm-hmm. If somebody says you're a weirdo, it's okay. But if you could center yourself and knock it out of the park as soon as you get out of your vehicle, or if you could center yourself and not get so angry with your kids, or if you can center yourself and not snap, that's exactly what we're looking for. Because as soon as you can control that, you can now go anywhere with the rest of your life and anything in your treatment and in healing path. Mm-hmm. I find it very important, dude, because of two reasons. Like we were talking about earlier, isolation kills, okay?
Right.
And secondly, the only one that can help you when you're isolated is yourself. I find it absolutely inspiring to really share transcendental meditation. I tell a lot of people about transcendental meditation. I consult on a lot of different types of transcendental meditation, different types of meditation, Mm-hmm. Some people really like aromatherapy, and I think it's wonderful. Some people really like Reiki. I haven't really tried it. It's a little more hands-on, pressure points, massage, but not really focused on, again, air manipulation, diaphragmatic breathing. That's another good one, just diaphragmatic breathing. Great for anxiety. Really gets that pit of the stomach. That good feeling gone, you know, where you can't feel like, you know, that feeling of anxiety where your whole intestines are tightening up. And you're like, oh crap. Oh no.
Yeah.
Diaphragmatic breathing. That it's saved my butt. Okay. Especially on shows and having to interview celebrities or authority figures, you know, governors, all these different people. I do have an anxiety disorder. That's what PTSD is. What helps though is those TM, that quick meditation or the deep meditation sometimes. Mm-hmm. Cannabis really helps. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, cannabis, I want to get really into cannabis helps. In a second. The transcendental meditation, do you need to have a mantra or anything like that? Because I've done a lot of different types of meditation. You know, I listen to binaural beats a lot. I practice mindfulness meditation where we are focusing on the diaphragmatic breathing. I try to meditate twice a day. You know, recently, this week, the last month or so, I've been having a lot of my own anxieties, my own issues, and meditation has really helped me out in you know, centering myself, but also practicing mindfulness and thinking about what I'm grateful for and thinking about all the things that I have in my life, and those sorts of things, you know. But do you need a mantra for this at all?
You know, actually, to really, really let you in on a secret, mantras help simply because of the way your brain, mind, and body work, okay? If you're in a class, the reason why mantras really help is because it gives a sense of unity with the entire class, okay? You got to understand the way the brain works is habit equals control, okay? Mm-hmm. However, you can't have a habit without education and relaxation.
Right.
So if you need a mantra, right, there's tons of it. Like I was telling you on YouTube where you can feel like you're one with the YouTube person that has a billion views. And that's what we're trying to get here, is that reconnection. Or you can go down, you know, little Susie Q's little mantra class in yoga, tai chi, little exposés or open door policy where you get to learn a little bit about it. Go out there, learn their thing. If you don't need one, I also pray when I'm in meditation. And that really helps me. I really recite proverbs are pretty awesome too. Proverbs, you know, and I say the proverb in my mind as I'm humming that same little tone. Or, like you were saying, that diaphragmatic breathing. Simply listening to your own breath sounds can be very therapeutic. One of the best things that I advise people is to, before you get into really heavy meditation, sit down and write a journal about how you're feeling before and after each session until it becomes second nature, and you could really get into that state of peaceful balance quicker. And then you go ahead and you can still journal, and it really helps. You're really going to see the results, though. What I'm really trying to say here is you're going to see the results a lot faster if you document what it is when you're going in and what you got from coming out of it. Mm-hmm. So if you document your input and your output, your equation's eventually going to change, because now you can figure out how it's working, what's working. And the equation here is your brain. It's either because it's messed up, unbalanced hormonally, or has an injury or contusions. It could also be that it's just depressed. It has horrible anxiety. The cortisol levels are huge, you know, huge cortisol levels. All those different stuff. It could be a very easy fix, but it doesn't happen, like I said, to the normal guy. I mean normal guy. I mean guys that really need the help, the girls that really need the help, the ones that are isolating themselves. Those are the ones that need to find the confidence in a system. Anyone. It could be Tai Chi with some mantras. It could be TM with mantras. It could be TM with TI. Okay? We could be, work it out, shorty. And that's your TM. You know, shaking it. It's whatever makes you feel good. And I tell people, dude, I love changing it up, because you're going to, once you get down past this whole I can't relax or think of getting fit, right, you're going to get to a point where you find your isolation very encouraging and empowering, like I do now, right? I find it empowering as shit, because I'll sit down and I'll write 4 or 5 chapters out of my books, and then I'll rewrite 4 or 5 chapters out of my books, and then I'll work on another set of my other series of books that I'm working on. Then I'll sit over here, do some serious work on the show. I'll rebuild another show. I'll recapture a content from some other project that I'm working on, go back and do another project, and then turn around and start it all over again and go, you know, I don't like it, and I'll just toss it all away.
Mm.
Why? Because it usually takes me about 2.5 hours to do all that shit. Okay? Why? Okay, because of the overambition. The exact same stuff that causes people to nut up and go crazy and they can't handle the anxiety is the same exact power that Kobe Bryant used to become an icon.
Mm-hmm.
It's the exact same power Michael Jordan used to become an icon. It's not a secret, okay? It's how you utilize that perceived negative energy, which is anxiety, cortisol dumps, sweating and being nervous and all this horrible crap. It's turning that crap into something that, A, you can make fun of and be comfortable with and accept, hence the term logotherapy that I really love throwing out there. It's a great sense of therapy. TM. If you have TM with logotherapy, dude, oh my goodness, that's the best combination I've found. I make fun of myself because I'm doing TM. I'm like, oh my goodness, look at me. I'm a Californian now.
What is logotherapy again, you say?
All right, so logotherapy, let me put it in a nutshell for you, is where you look at your circumstances and you actually equate what they are, not what you perceive them to be, and use a sense of humor in order to segregate the importance of what you're looking at, to disconnect and really, really look at what you're going through. It's pretty much a good way to take a step back and go, all right, what am I looking at? Oh, shit, okay, that's what we're doing. And the fun part is you can make fun of yourself. I choose to make fun of myself. And, in fact, it's gotten me in some hot water because I do it in public. Mm-hmm. And because I have the PTSD, the TBI, and I fall and crap, I make fun of all the different people that have TBI and PTSD and all the other crap. So it comes off as, you know, I'm being mean towards people with disabilities sometimes. But that's me. I'm talking about myself. I'm trying to, you know, get out of the house and go golfing for, you know, a Wounded Marine Fund tournament. And usually I don't, because I get so serious about not being able to swing the golf club that I go, I'm an embarrassment. Well, not really, because I know a bunch of legless assholes are going to be over there, and they're barely going to hit the ball further than me. So I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to embarrass myself with them. And that's the way I think of it. You know, it helps me laugh it off. You know, I'm going to be with my bastards, and we're all going to hang out, have some tequila, talk about the old days, and hopefully see some cute senoritas and take some pictures on the golf course. That's really what it's all about. I mean, you can do that, right? Mm-hmm. Right? We can do that. That sounds fun as shit. Or we can sit down at a wall during our isolation, stare at the wall, okay, and go, hi, Mr. Wall. I'm fatter than shit. I don't know what to do. I can't even hum. Oh, depressed. And that's how I feel sometimes too, you know? But it's looking at it and going, what could it be instead of what is it right now? If we can take what it is right now and go, it's not that bad, you know, like we were talking earlier, we actually live in a utopia, I believe, 100%, because you can easily, just as easily go down and buy yourself a big old ounce of cannabis. You can go buy yourself an Ace of Spades Magnum champagne bottle. You can buy yourself a freaking yacht. You can even get yourself an abortion. You can kill babies legally where we're at, okay, bro? And if those people can have a good life, I'm pretty sure we can have a good life, all right? Like, at least one where we're not so damn depressed or upset or frustrated about our circumstances, because they're never going to change. We did what we did. It was painful for some of us. Like, my whole thing is kids. I'll never get over it. I'll never be able to bring back the kids I wasn't able to help in combat. I'll never be able to bring back the kids that I lost in the emergency room when I was in North Carolina. Those are the ones that are always going to carry me. I mean, literally, carry me. Because it's as if, to me, that their death is as precious as their life, because I get to hopefully live it for them. And if I don't see it that way, I probably won't go out and do much. And that's exactly what the options are. Are you going to do it or not?
Yeah.
And that's the basics, dude. Yeah. And then once you make a decision to do something, go ahead and do it the same way that we used to do it. Ball's hard all the way out.
That's awesome. You're also a big advocate for medical cannabis and medical cannabis use in the veteran community. Can you tell us a little bit about your views on it and, different things that have led you to the conclusion that medical cannabis is effective for treatment for certain ailments?
Absolutely. So the history behind it was, when I was in the military, I had a lot of research scientists. I talked to a lot of them about what we were doing during the clinical trial phase that we were at and on this other project, okay? What we found out was there was a certain homeopathic compound, okay? Not cannabis. This has nothing to do with cannabis right now, okay? Mm-hmm. There was a certain homeopathic compound that's naturally found in an occurring plant, right, that was capable of restoring something that's degenerative, and usually you'll never get it back, okay? I'm not going to go in on it because I don't really like talking about whatever anybody's doing their stuff on. That's their stuff. It's not my rights, okay? What I am going to say is that study sparked another study. That sparked another study. That sparked another study. And before you know it, we're looking at the majority of these odd herbals and probiotic systems and different type of preventative things, okay? When I was learning all this different crap in lab tech school, I got to learn all about, you know, the fun hormone systems, all about the different pathways, the way your brain works neurologically, the way the synapses works, the way that your adrenals work, everything works, your body functions, how long different cells live and die. What is the current study? What is the current scientific facts? You know, all that crap. And when I was asking for help, as soon as they started me on the pills, the Celexas, the bupropion, the Effexors, the Trazodone, all that crap, I didn't like it, like, at all. It didn't work at all. So I really started doing a lot of research on all these different systems and pathways, and I started hacking away at it, you know, just like anybody else would if you're trying to figure out what's wrong with your car. You know, I can't get my battery to fire, you know, let me go ahead and look up the Google machine on batteries. So that's what I did. While I was in, I started doing some research on homeopathic medicine. I talked to one of my doctors. She was a homeopathic doctor before the Navy and still practices now. We got to talk about cannabis on a professional level, okay? And I mean that sincerely, because I really dislike the current stigma of cannabis in the medicine industry and its respects by both providers, patients, and lawmakers. Because if it's something we can't put our thumb on, right, we can't identify why it works, why it doesn't, then we have to, by logical sense, simply figure it out, do some scientific research, right? So we were sitting there talking about that simple discussion, not about cannabis or strain or what it would be good for or not, but at the simple fact, nobody is looking at it the way it should be. And me and my doctor were sitting there. We didn't get in an argument. It was more like a very great agreement where we both looked at it and go, man, that'd be good to start some type of either clinical trials, some type of empirical processing or data collection. We should get some statistics on the shit. What ended up happening was it sparked an idea. I started talking to my friends back home. They started talking to their friends. We started talking to our medical buddies. Our medical buddies started talking to their medical buddies. Before I know it, I'm on this mailing list on, what is it called? Cannabis Research and the MAPS. What is it called? Multiple Ancillary Psychological Whatever Thing. And they figure out all the different other stuff, too, with all the psilocybin, mushrooms, LSD, MDMA, and how it affects all this other systemic problems. They're actually looking to psychedelics and how they do all those wonderful things in microdosing. So I started doing that as soon as I got out, not doing the drugs, but looking into this stuff. I've met a bunch of people when I started the show really looking into cannabis, because that's when I started utilizing cannabis as my primary medication for both my psychological ailments and pain management. But I still do require morphine because of how bad my back is. It really sucks to explain, because I go, yeah, if I don't take morphine, dude, I can't walk. It's really damn near impossible because of how bad the pain is. And it radiates through into my testicles. So that's really what gets me the drop, like no other. So I started using cannabis at increment levels. This is when I started documenting my findings, my journal, right? Really, really doing my due process here. What is it on my dose? What strand specificity is this? What is the terpene level? What type of alkaloids are in here? What type of acidic attributes are going on? How is this going to be the best utilized? Where and when is it going to be best utilized? What form of the plant is going to be the best form to ingest, smoke, or utilize? What I found in my studies of three and a half, four years, that's when I concluded my report, my journal, and I went to Denver, and I didn't give a presentation, but I discussed with Dr. Sue Sisley. She's on Thunder Kupka's Weed 3, and Matt Call, he's on Viceland's Weed Kit, and Sean Kierman, a lot of names in the cannabis industry, and I simply mentioned my formula in the way that I want to utilize cannabis for a medicinal product. And everybody shit the roof, bro. They were like, nobody's doing that. Are you? How did you come up with that idea? And it was simple. I want to optimize this absorption, right? We all want to optimize the medicinal absorption of whatever it is we're putting into our body, whether it be the morphine, whether it be the clonazepam, whether it be whatever it is you're taking. It doesn't matter if you're pooping it out, right? We want you to absorb it. The same thing in nutrition. We don't want you just to eat food. We want you to absorb the food. Hence the reason essential amino acids, essential vitamins, and all these other great things need to occur in your diet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I found was utilizing whole plant extract in my super, super duper secret process, we were able to isolate the cannabinoids that we want, the right terpene level that we wanted, the right THCA, THC, and cannabidiol, as well as our entire structure is absolutely absorbable to the point where you can take this as a daily food diet and you'd still get a medicinal sensation. However, it won't be as intense as what everybody is utilized or has been is used to on the edible scale of medicinal products. And you get more CBD, more THC, more absorption, and more of the medicinal value without the grogginess, the tiredness, and all the other
saying, because one of the things, because I have ulcerative colitis, I have severe ulcerative colitis. And, you know, one of the things I tried when I was, you know, going through a severe flare up was I tried THC. And so I tried an edible. And the first time it really helped me. The second time I tried, I got one of these cookies. And like literally I had like maybe an eighth of the cookie. Like I didn't have the whole cookie. And dude, it was like the most paranoid feeling of my life. You know what I mean? And so you're saying that through this process you have, it's, you're going to get less of that kind of like feeling you get where you start. Cause I think it, on a couple of different levels, you know, there's certain people who can handle that kind of thing. And, but if you have like certain anxieties in yourself, if you have certain things you're telling yourself all the time, if you're in a negative state, that kind of medicinal feeling isn't going to be the best thing for you at the time. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But at the same time, I really want the health benefits that you can get from it. And so, so are you able to overcome that? Are you able to get rid of that kind of thing?
To an extent, absolutely. And the best part is understanding the plant that you're using.
Mm-hmm. Right?
There's three different strains. There's the indica, the sativa, and the ruderalis. Okay, it's like a combination, but it's actually not. And then the hybrids are the actual combinations between your percentages of indica and sativa. All right, so a lot of people get, when they get that sensation of anxiety, isn't necessarily the cannabis, like you were saying, right? It could be self-inflicted, hyperattention to one's condition. If you relax or in a sedative state, and the only thing you keep repeating in your mind is that you're going to go crazy, you're going to go crazy, you're going to go crazy, you're going to go crazy. Well, I'm not a special ed teacher, but I'm pretty sure if you repeat things enough, you're eventually going to either A, believe them, or try to believe them, you know? So what I really like to tell people is if you have natural anxiety level, stay away from very high CBD.
Say that again? Your audio is just a little bit cloudy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me again? Can you hear me now?
Yep, now I hear you.
Okay. So what you want to do is stay away from your CBD levels that are really high because you're going to get that body sensation and body lock.
Mm-hmm.
You want to stay away from the indicas because you're going to get the same thing. So if you have natural anxiety, you want to stay away from really strong THC sativas. And also really strong indicas, because if you're not good, I'm not good when I'm sedated. I get really, really, really nervous, really bad anxiety. that's the reason why all the sleeping pills that they tried to give me didn't work for me. It actually caused worse anxiety and lack of sleep and depression, sadly enough. So what I found out is with cannabis, there is this poetic slight relationship, okay, mm-hmm. where accompanying it with TM, it's really an amazing therapeutic property. Now, accompanying it with additional stress, it could be a very negative property mm-hmm. because it is a therapeutic drug. The way I see it and the way I discussed it to my scientist, doctor, friends, all those guys, is if you're going to give a stimulant, which is a sativa, or a sedative, you have to reflect in that person's personal experience. You know, just like when somebody takes Vicodin, it's not the same experience, not the same medical benefit all the time.
Yeah.
It's the same reason why I don't disagree with psych meds or antidepressants, because sometimes it really helps. For me, it didn't, and for many, many others, it doesn't. So what I say is simply this. If you try cannabis at a responsible level, if you are set in a foundation that is accepting of both your limitations and your path of seeking a remedy or healing product, whether it be cannabis, whether it be testosterone, because even testosterone is looked at negatively due to the stigma in sports and everything else.
Absolutely.
But basic basal metabolic function, that's not what the world knows, okay? Basic small dosing and THC, psilocybin, and all these other drugs that people abuse to get a psychedelic trip. Now, that's the discussion we need to be having is, where's the studies on actual medical use? Besides recreational use, there isn't any. So if we were to say, what's going to help when you have anxiety? I can't legally say shit because there's no findings scientifically. It'd be literally like me screaming, climate change is real. Prove it with your fucking data, okay?
Yeah.
That's the first question any doctor's going to ask, okay? Prove it with data. I don't have data in the way that people look at it because it's non-recognized, okay? What I can say is what I have in my journals, the way that I worked out my formula, the way I patient, what I've noticed, okay, with my product, with the type of style of extraction, you're removing all the negative potentialities of both contamination because you could also be getting anxiety from the type of concentration in the extract that you utilize. So if they use the BHO, was it butene hydrogen oxide extraction or something, or if they do a vacuum extraction or a press extraction, there's all these different types of concentrates out in the world that you really need to start paying attention to the THC content and percentages as well as the CBD. But here's the catch. Anxiety and all the other fun stuff actually comes from the terpene in relationship and your relationship with that. So if you drink a vodka, okay, some people get really groggy. Other people get energized. Same thing with tequila. Some people hit the floor. Some people don't stop dancing on the floor. You know?
Yeah.
If you get a good sativa at the right percentage, man, you're never going to stop writing. But you go one percentage up, or you take a little too many hits. Now you're spazzing out, right? It's really, you gotta journal how you're utilizing this medication. The dosages are very important, just like any other medication. And when you utilize it, there has to be an intent, a therapeutic intent. Without it, you're literally just smoking weed. Okay. Now that's cool. All right, I accept it. All right, that's what a lot of people want. All right, I'm cool for it. That's not my mission. That's not my job here on the earth, okay? It's to help people understand medicine and therapy and healing and health. Because if it were a discussion that way, we would already see the VA covering medical cannabis for veterans. We would already see the federal government implementing different studies on this plant. You would see an implementation in California that's had medical cannabis since 1995 have some form of regulation where, Chris, I could give you a straight answer. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I could give you a straight answer saying, oh, well, what you want to really do is take a Kush, OG Kush, smoke about half a joint of that big guy, make sure it's about 0.5 grams of a joint, and so half of it would be 0.25 grams. If you get it ingested by a joint, it's 17% usually, because that's the ratio of air to THC smoke content, right? If you use a bong, you're going or a water pipe, you're going to increase the absorption by maybe 20-30%. If you use an edible, depending on how well the edible is dosed and how much or how less you've eaten, just like any other therapeutic drug, it could hit you really hard. It can't hit you at all. It's stuff that there's no regulation on, simply because nobody wants to have cannabis be established. And that's my personal opinion. Once you get it established or have a precedent of this is what you can get as a result, you know, that whole input equation output, if you can actually nail it down with empirical research and backed studies and then come out with data, it takes 5-10 years, but at least we get started now. And that's what's not even happened, like on any level.
Yeah. Yeah. And, nobody's even looking at it right now.
They want to. Desperately bad. That's the reason why I talk about Sue Sisley so much. She's become a really great advocate, and I want to say lobbyist, but not in a bad sense, for cannabis research throughout the entire nation, specifically for PTSD in veterans. Do you know why? Because it works. We can't say it works legally because of the lack of scientific proof, but just like people can't say climate change is real and enforce some kind of federal crime law above it, because what else? You know, we say it's really dead, accept it. That's not the way it works, okay? Science doesn't work that way. You have to have multiple data points. You have to have clinical research. You have to have peer-reviewed journals. You have to have this stuff down. You've got to. Or guess what? Doctors don't understand it. And if doctors don't understand it, if pharmaceutical companies can't extract it, if farmers can't grow it, what are we doing? Limiting ourselves. We're limiting our resources to the health and well-being. And we're really telling people, we don't want you to do anything else than what we tell you. And I'm going, as a corpsman, I don't handle that very well. Okay, me personally, I'm always looking to help somebody, either if I have to overstep a boundary, meaning if I have to yell at that admiral, I'll yell at the admiral. And that's happened, okay? Mm-hmm. If I have to discuss something on a level with another human being, whether they have rank or not, to the point where they're open with me and go, fuck, you're right. That's what we really need to have with cannabis, because we're not punks, right, walking around asking to get high. Not at all. The majority of people behind this cannabis movement and utilization, I would say, are very much educated, are extremely passionate about cannabis and about, in and of itself, simply because it's much like the pit bull and Rottweiler and German Shepherd and black guy, you know, horrible stigma bullshit that the entire populace really feeds into, even though the majority of our population in the world has utilized cannabis at one point in their time, regardless of it being medicinal or recreational. So it's really actually one of my favorite papers that I wrote, bro. I hope your listeners check it out as well as you. It's called Medicinal versus Recreational. It was an article that I wrote to really kind of have this conversation in a grandiose way, where we're not really talking about how we utilize a plant, but why aren't we having the conversation needed to say how we utilize this plant, right? On a government level, on a societal level, I go into the simple fundamentals of freedom. I even talk about finding the clitoris, okay? So, I mean, it's a diverse paper. and I got to turn it into an audio program. It runs about 25 minutes on hashtag DDTS, and it's really focused on answering all the questions that you asked a little bit clearer than what I gave you right now, and in a very, very general way on how I believe that cannabis can be utilized both in the medicinal world, and again, it can be used in the recreational world, but we first need medical standards on how to implement this thing. We need it because people are going to abuse something they don't quite understand and then turn around and blame that something, and then it's going to get taken away from us. And I don't like that shit. I'm not a little kid. All right? We're not little babies. We're not walking around pleading our cases, supplicating to our lords and authority figures. That's not how America works. When we say we the people want to utilize something or figure out something, that is exactly what the government and every single organization that's out there is obligated to at least help us figure out. Now, if they don't want to, that's okay. We can figure it out without them. The problem there in lies, how do we do it? Now, if we simply sit down and have conversations, you know, podcast, that's great. However, some of us guys, we're getting together, we're having like town hall meetings, and we're getting these summits, the cannabis investor summits, a lot of these cannabis expos, get-togethers, not smoke sessions, okay? I want that to be clear. They're not smoke sessions. They're summits to explain how, but entrepreneurially, this is going to be the next big thing, all right? Cannabis is going to be the next huge thing. If you ask me as a consultant in the industry, right, what's its potentiality? Trillions, not billions, trillions, okay? Now, of that market, how early do you want the American people to get in on it? That's really where I'm coming from. How early could we, as Californians, have been benefiting from this market that is being denied? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying let's get rich off of something, okay? That's not my point. But if we can make money and alleviate an insurmountable stress on one state by launching a pilot program for federal distribution and medical cannabis research, right? If we were to sit down and have this conversation with Jerry Brown instead of talking about limiting our weapons rights because of terrorists, yeah, which is retarded.
Yeah, don't okay? get me started on that. Yeah.
All right. If we were to have intelligent bureaucratic processes, we would see prosperity and liberty on a level that people would flourish and thrive to the point where we would forget about all this traumatic bullshit in 2016 where everybody all of a sudden got hypersensitive. And here's the beauty about logotherapy. It literally discusses all that I just laid out in a very beautiful way, where if you have the hyper intent or hyper focus on achieving happiness, that's what it really focuses on, you're never going to obtain it simply because you're so focused on obtaining it. You're not enjoying your journey. And that's where you really find happiness, is on that creation journey and path of learning. Because once you get there, if you get there, mm-hmm, it's done, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And you have to start a new journey.
You're dead. Well, either that or you're dead. That's the end game. You know what I mean?
No, that's the thing. I think death is not the end game by any means. I think death is very much a beginning of a new journey in a way that I can't even fathom. And I do tons of research on theologic, philosophic stuff, you know, ideological, religion, you name it, dude.
But at the same time, for this life, for this mortal corpus that we have, you know, we only got one chance in this life to do what we want to do.
Yes, sir.
And if we're not focused on the journey and we're not focused on everything, if we're constantly searching for the end game, you know, the end game, pretty much. I mean, I personally don't want to retire. I don't want to be an old guy who sits on his chair and then, you know, talks about how I used to do shit. I want to be somebody doing shit till I die.
Yeah.
You know, and then
all the way up until the day you die. And a lot of guys are like that from our community. And in fact, there was a wonderful question that was asked by me when I was doing Operation Game On's interview with Tony Perez. A gentleman asked me, why is it that the veteran community today is in such a great need of assistance when our veterans from World War I and World War II came back and ran shit? And that was just not wording per se, but, you know, I'm trying to rush this thing. Mm-hmm. What I told them was simple. Look at the environment. And if people want to exclaim that climate change is real, it is, but in a psychological way and in a, a very simplistic way. If you were to look at the climate of that war and what the scale of war that was, if you were to look at the population that was affiliated with either A, the war itself being in it, or B, working in a steel mill pumping out these aircraft or bombs, if you were completely detached, you at least had something to do with the war. There was no escaping it. By Vietnam era, what we noticed was a degradation of unity in societal means, meaning nobody supported the war after we got involved. Now, that's exactly what we noticed with Iraq and Afghanistan. However, the big detrimental difference is the outlook and the stigmatization of a veteran and the military combat person, either female or male now. If society rejects that individual based on their acts, just their pure existence, much how like homosexuality was rejected a long time ago, much like how being African American was, it's still well rejected. It's not as bad as being a veteran of combat, and I really mean that. If you were to look at the history of how what we do in our military services and how they're viewed in society, we're practically viewed as subhuman, okay? Mm-hmm. On every standpoint, economically, demographically, right now, institutionally, we're very, very, very much treated as subhuman. And I mean that because it's now becoming a human rights issue, okay? The lack of medical attention in this 8,000 deaths a year at a minimum is criminal now. If you were to ask me, a medical paraprofessional, okay, the lack of effort on the military's behalf to solve the issues of suicide, of depression, of PTSD, that's why there's such a grand separation and difference between our World War II veteran and our current societal veteran nowadays. Because the dude coming out of the military now, one, isn't even viewed as a citizen. They're viewed as a dog, according to economics and the teaching of every economics teacher in every single college throughout the United States, okay? Yeah, ask yourself why. Let's look at it. If you were to look at every single authoritative figure, governor, representative, how many of them have served? What's the percentage? How about in society, what's the percentage of the family unit having either a connection with the military, like we talked about in World War II, where it would either be unavoidable because you're working for the government in some capacity or not. Now things are to the point where everybody's absolutely not affiliated with the military. The current stigma, and actually if you were to look at the way journalism is driven now, it pays to drive home the psychopathic stigma of military and veterans. Why? Because all these police organizations are getting millions of dollars each year based off of this lone wolf, psychopathic, protective bullshit that gets them a lot of financing. And I don't know why. But if after every fucking shooting that's recently happened, somebody ties in that the person was a veteran, oh, and this must be because veterans are going nuts and we got to watch out. We got to watch out. We got to take their guns and shit. What I'm telling you, that's the exact same shit Nazi did. Okay, Nazi hit return indeed, bro. That guy. If you target the war fighters, the psychology, if you target the means to betterment, if you target the prosperity, you're going to be able to get what you want without even having to fight the warrior. And to me, I sit back and go, if my government fed me pills, okay, day after day, to the point where I almost died in the promise that I would get better, all right? And what ended up happening was I literally almost died, and to the point where, yep, sure enough, almost died, all right? Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and say, what are we doing for our veterans? Why are we spending hundreds of billions of dollars each year in this thing called military and veteran health if that's not our actual goal, all right? What are we doing as a society to improve our medical capabilities in the veterans' affairs? And who the fuck is holding anybody accountable? Because if I worked for the veterans' affairs, bro, I'm telling you, if I was the head dude, shit wouldn't be this way. But that's anybody and everybody that actually cares about the veteran. So I got to ask the simple question, right? What do you feel when you go to the VA? What do you feel when you go out in society?
For me, You know, there's been time. It really depends on the VA, and it really depends on the day. And, you know, I think that one of the things for me over, you know, there was a time period where I didn't even talk about being a veteran because I didn't want somebody to come up to me and thank me. I didn't want somebody to come up to me and say, I didn't want to talk about it. You know, I'm trying to focus on things here. I'm trying to deal with things. I don't want to hear about your uncle who served. I don't want to hear about how you almost served. I don't want to hear about your cousin who's a Navy SEAL because you're trying to top me right now. So there was a point where I, you know, I just stopped talking about it altogether. And I was also in academia for a while. You know, I was in college for a long time. And when you're going to the University of California at Santa Barbara, and you know, you're in the political science department, it's not a popular thing to talk about, you know?
Exactly.
So in a lot of ways I tried to
work. I went to art school. So, I mean, yeah, it's pretty hard to talk to people that have really no exposure.
Right. Exactly. And the hard thing is, you know, that isolated me a lot because I didn't really relate to any of those people up there. I didn't really relate to a lot of the students. I didn't relate to, you know, what I consider to be the kind of ultra leftist culture on college campuses. So I really felt alone in a lot of different ways. So, I feel like The problem that veterans are facing when they get out right now is a struggle for identity. It's a struggle for being able to be proud of what they did, being able to proudly say who they are, right? And that's a big thing right there, without being forced to become something else. Because if you look at society right now and you look around at different types of people, we have sheep. You know, we have sheep, and there is no way to say that, right? People latch themselves on to strong personalities. People latch themselves on to strong political figures. And in many ways, we wait for those political figures to fix our problems for us, to do our fighting for us, to do our political fighting for us. You know, and I don't relate to a lot of people who just want to sit back and wait for that kind of thing to happen. And it makes me very wary, very, very wary when we have presidential candidates who are speaking bellicosely, who are trying to espouse what they consider conservative ideals, but don't really match up to what I consider a conservative is. And I might catch a lot of shit for this, but I don't really care. You know, it bothers me because we don't have anybody in the government speaking for us as a veteran class, right? We have people who are trying to pander to us. We have people who are trying to win our votes. We have people who are trying to claim that they are on our side. And regardless of how much money somebody raises for a charity, that does not particularly matter to me. What matters to me is what somebody is able to do to try to pressure these things that we need to get into our system in order to get better care for our brothers and our sisters, in order to be able to live the lives that we want to live, not just a life that's imposed on us, and to preserve our own freedoms that we fought for.
Exactly, dude. You said it absolutely perfect, dude. And right now, dude, I would say that's our perfect opportunity. Both as leaders, you know, talk show hosts, I got, oh my goodness, so many people ask me to run for office, different things. They ask Doc Jacobs still to run for office. He's actually looking at running. I'm actually thinking of California governor. We're looking at taking advantage of the lack of representation. And even if it doesn't end up, you know, where we all get elected, what if, okay, just for what if real quick, right? Let's do a fun experiment. Mm-hmm. What if throughout the 50 states, we start getting veterans to run every single election for any and every office that's available. And eventually, we're going to be able to get in office. We know how to run things. We know how to do stuff. We know how to communicate. We know how to work as a team. That's exactly where everybody in the civilian world learned this stuff, was from warriors and the military, okay? When we run, we got to stay focused on the implementation of group and societal unification, not just specific community, not this black lives stuff, not this gay lives stuff.
stuff, not this gun line stuff. None of that shit. It has to be unified. Now, here's the worst part. If in a society right now you get paid to diversify, how in the world are you ever going to follow a leader that's saying unify at all costs? Unify. And in fact, here's the fun part. The Constitution as is pretty much linearizes exactly what we want to do, right? As a people, as a veteran community, we have the power to simply state this is how it's going to be conducted. Thank you. Here's our petition. Here's our this. Here's our that. It's submitted. We wait. And if they don't submit or admit or fix or whatever or amend, then we make it a little bit more elevated by incorporating more states, more representatives, more lawyers. And no matter how hard they come back, you've got to keep fighting. And that's exactly what Martin Luther King talked about in his dream. It wasn't for blacks only. It was for prosperity. It was for liberty. It was for us all to thrive. And if you were to say what community right now, out of all the communities in the world, what community right now is being ostracized to the point of oppression? The veteran community. What community right now is being killed off by the thousands a year? By either lack of medical attention, suicide, overdose, or not even recorded properly deaths. Okay? How many thousands of people have died in this grand experiment of political and bureaucratic, I want to say visual manipulation or virtual care? Because it's exactly like what the mayor did in Katrina when he lied about providing levy support, maintenance, and infrastructure assistance with all the millions that he acquired, or all the millions that he said he was going to use for the police to improve the entire New Orleans area. That never happened. He put it in his wallet, and he walked away. And guess what happened? Millions of people faced that. The entire nation faced that traumatic, that horrible tragedy. From what? Corruption. Weakness. Leaders right now, dude, are at their absolute weakest point in, I would say, in the world history, okay? In the world history. It's sad because me, as a disabled man, I look across and I look at everybody I know, all my friends, and I actually said this, I was just talking to Ryan Hammer yesterday about meeting a pretty wildly accepted celebrity director, right? And the only thing I could say was he's unimpressive. Just like the majority of representatives I've met, governors, ex-president, vice president, you name it, dude. They're unimpressive. The majority of the Marines that I've met that just go out and, you know, touch other people's butts, playing fun, you know, whatever, those guys, surprisingly enough, are more impressive to me and to the majority of people that I met than anybody else that I could even, like, speak on the behalf of. So why not have these guys step up? You know, get out of our own complacency. Get out of our own comfort zone.
Right. And
just like you were telling, you know,
dude, that's the big thing. I think that one of the things that has been one of the biggest things I've been thinking about over the last year is we cannot wait. We cannot wait for the civilian leadership to catch up. We cannot wait for politicians to pander to us, because all we're going to get is pandering. If we are not taking action, if we are not working to secure our own freedoms, if we are not working to secure our own bodily health, then we are putting ourselves in a situation of dependence. And when you put yourself in a situation of dependence, that's when tyranny rules. That is when your freedoms get surrendered. And that is when you surrender yourself, your identity, and you lose exactly who you are, and you lose your freedom.
Well, you lose everything.
Yep.
Because ideologically, I find this so intriguing. This is a great conversation. Ideologically, and this is exactly in the paper that I wrote, the one I told you about, medicinal versus recreational. It's a whole section on freedom, okay? Ideologically, if you do not feel free, how in the world can anybody define it otherwise? If you do not feel free enough to walk out in the middle of your street, say hello to your next door neighbor, or go have a beer or meet Miss Susie Q and have kids and raise a family. If you feel so damn afraid of the police that when you get pulled over, you have to act as if you're some freaking robot, I'm going like, dude, I don't want to bash police, nor do I want to bash leadership, nor do I want to bash anybody. But why are we allowing this hysteria to continue when all we got to do is calm down? Really, really look at it. If the leadership right now were to do one thing to fix the situation, right? And I mean every situation. I don't mean just the veteran situation. I mean the economic malfeasance, the lack of employment, the continual spit on the entirety of the Constitution. When you look at the utilization of rhetoric to the point of absolute nothingness, and these people are the ones getting voted in, we as a society have to, we are obligated to, stand up and go, nah. And here's the funnier part. More and more and more people are beginning to see exactly like what you were saying, the sheep and wolf bullshit. I don't like that either, okay, because it's humanity. We have to understand power corrupts, okay? Mm-hmm. And absolute power is absolutely corrupt, okay? So if power corrupts, they did a study. I can't remember which college it was. It might have been MIT or some really prestigious school like Princeton or something, where they had guards, okay?
You're talking about the Stanford Milgram experiments.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
Look at that. Right, and look at the leadership people want in office right now and ask yourself, is it because people feel inadequate? Probably. Do they feel uneducated? Probably. But I'll tell you what, when the law and the government is at its most corrupt, its laws and its constrictions and bureaucratic systems are at its largest and unexplainable. And that's his story. Okay, that's not my motherfucking story. That's his story. That's Plato. That's Socrates. That's Cyclocles. All those guys. All right. That's Herpocrates. All of these old philosophers, when they talked about the fall of any society, of philosophy, mankind, humanity, what they were talking about was the loss of humanity. And what we're talking about in humanity, and that simple article of medicinal versus recreational, and in that little segment, freedom, the humanity section of feeling free, of actually being capable of having the sensation of freedom, is on the individual himself or herself. Mm-hmm. To simply say, I am free. Now, that could be a man in prison, and he'll be more free than a man in his house in California. Now, tell me why that's accepted by any leader, and I'll tell you how we fix it.
Yeah.
But if you can't tell me why that's accepted by any leader, I can't offer a resolution, nor can anybody else. Because if it's Jerry Brown's, if it's his world and he wants to put all these restrictions on our firearms, okay, and it happens, and the crime rate goes up, shouldn't that be something in the law where it's automatically repealed if it doesn't work? Because I'm an idiot. Right?
Well,
and I explain this to my wife this way. If I'm an idiot and I plug a hole, but the fucking pipe is still leaking, am I still an idiot? Yes, because I plugged the hole, I didn't fix the leak, and now I have a big mess to deal with. Right? You can either do it the right way and fix the leak, right? Turn off the water at the main, do the whole process, actually spend your time, cut new PVC, do what's needed, right? Or you simply put duct tape over it and wait for the next guy to take it all in. And that's what a lot of people do, especially in a presidential candidacy. And I'm going, dude, we can't keep doing that as a nation, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the media today, so I have a couple of things in my head about the media. And the first thing is this. The media overall is very negative because what they're trying mm-hmm. to do is they're trying to stimulate the amygdala. That is... The amygdala is where we house our fears. It's part of the brain that we were talking about all along when we were talking about post-traumatic stress, you know, and anxiety and things like that. But they're trying to stimulate our amygdala because our amygdala is what gets the attention. And that, there was a benefit to that back when we were out in the wild because that's what kept you alive. right? When you saw danger, that's what kept you alive. If you actually look at things, we actually live in amazing times. You know, their life expectancy is longer than it ever has been. You know, when we think about global violence, right? Interstate violence right now, non-existent. We're dealing with terrorist attacks. But at the same time, the way the media looks at things, for example, this gun control issue, right? The media likes to focus on the firearm. They like to focus on the fact that an individual took a firearm into a crowded space or a school or, you know, a mall in Germany. And they like to, you know, focus on the fact that that individual was able to get a hold of that firearm. They focus on the fact of whether or not that individual was registered for that firearm or not. But they focus on the weapon. Rarely, they don't really focus much on the person. They don't focus much on the individual. What they're focusing on is that fear. That fear that they're trying to stimulate in our own minds. That fear that is going to tell people that it's the gun that did it, right? If human beings didn't have guns, we wouldn't be killing each other. Well, guess what? We would be. And if guns were illegal, like they are severely restricted like they are in Europe, mass shootings are still going to happen, like the one in Germany that happened yesterday.
Not only that, the weapon's going to change, and the severity of the crime is going to change or escalate. The psychopathicness behind the crime is going to increase. What we notice as a society is reflected as an individual and as a whole. And for PTSD to be the discussion or analogy here, if we don't understand the trauma on the relationship of both the individual and how it is reflected upon the society, we can't fix the problem. Because again, you're saying the exact same thing the journalists, the media, the government is focusing on. The gun. And I'm going, hold on. The gun didn't put itself in its pants. The gun didn't load itself. The gun didn't pull the trigger. It had to have human intention. And I'm sorry, friend, but if a ex-Secretary of State and potential presidential candidate can be defended by both the Department of Justice, the Attorney General, and the Federal Bureau of Investigations Director, and she's the fucking criminal, and all I'm going to say is, look, if that's the case, all right, we as Americans need to not consider the law beyond the Constitution simply because of their wording and that hearing. Did you have any illegal intent walking around with a concealed weapon even though you don't have it registered? Nope, I sure didn't, sir. I'm just here to protect you, actually, because I see how much horribleness is in the world. Now, is that a negative intent or a positive intent? Because that's what they established in that hearing, right? Mm-hmm. However, that's not reciprocated to the individual and their rights. Now, here's the funnier part. If we were talking about homosexuality instead of a gun, let's talk about a penis, okay? Why? Because we both understand that they're both a tool. They're a means to either project a projectile or not, okay? It's either urine or semen. That's it. It's a penis. Now, here's the fun fact. If you don't wrap your tool, you can probably get an STD or give somebody AIDS, which is technically attempted murder, and especially in the state of California. If you accidentally give somebody AIDS, you can still be tried for attempted murder, whether or not your intent was bad or good. Now, here's the fun fact, okay? Let's go back to when the AIDS outbreak occurred. The same way that these terrorist occurrence is an epidemic, and our gun violence, even though it's the lowest in national and world history since the development of firearms and violence. And when you look at the statistics, if you remove Chicago and Los Angeles and Fresno and all these concentrated areas where there's not allowed concealed carry or open carry, or the fact that it's published that, dude, you can shoot a fucker if they come in your home, guess what? You see an increase of violent crime. You see an increase of gun use in crime, and you see an increase in homicide.
Exactly.
Now, just using that specific little thing, right, translating it over, reciprocating it down, utilizing the same intelligence, right? By definition, you would have to ban homosexuality because of its negative effect and affect to the homosexual community and society because of the AIDS epidemic. It's fucking stupid to say that shit, and I know it, but that's the only correlation I could say for a left-wing asshole to calm down and a right-wing asshole to calm down, laugh a little bit, and say, you know, he has a point. Because if we were to do exactly what we were doing with guns right now, we would say, okay, we're not going to ban gay dicks. Okay, what we're going to do is say you have to use condoms, and we're going to ban big, black, scary dicks because they're big and black and scary, and that's the only reason. And that's exactly what's happening with firearms. And I just correlated a big, black dick to an assault weapon, and if nobody understands how hilarious that is, bro.
Well, that is the first time that term has been used on this podcast, so thank you so much for that. But you know, the big thing, and it comes down to this, the right of the individual to bear arms shall not be infringed, right? And exactly. That was the biggest thing, right? People argue about a well-regulated militia, and people argue about, you have to get into the minds of the founding fathers. The founding fathers had just committed revolution, right? They were in a position where they were underneath a tyrant, and that tyrant was stealing their rights away. And exactly. They knew that the only reason why they were able to fight that tyrant off was because of guns. And the second we have our guns taken away, the second we no longer are allowed to defend ourselves in the way that we choose to, is the second that tyranny takes over. Now, on top of that, if you look at the trend of terrorist attacks these days, they targeted the World Trade Center, they targeted the Pentagon, but since then, what have they been targeting? You know, I live in Redlands, California, right near San Bernardino. What did they target? An office party? A Christmas party? You know, it was that ridiculous. You know, what else have they been targeting these days? Think about that.
They had the homosexual club in Florida.
Exactly.
There's the hidden one where people are hacking people's heads off in the workspace, and it's being labeled disgruntled worker. And I'm going, you guys are nuts, man.
Right. No. And
the political rhetoric has gone absolutely insane.
It's ridiculous. Right? And then all of a sudden, the what's his name? Gavin Long. The Marine Corps veteran who, piece of shit, who killed 3 police officers in Baton Rouge, is labeled as having PTSD.
Yes, and connected to the Marine Corps simply because he's a veteran. Now, and again, look at that simple correlation and absolute negligence on both the media and the government and now the military for not defending the individual veteran or the veteran community by saying, we can't generalize all veterans. No, we're the only community that's allowed to be generalized, shat on, and discarded as waste.
Exactly.
And I literally mean that. Okay, I literally mean discarded as waste because I've had to write stories, I've had to do consults on discussions on how wives have to find their husbands, rest up in remains, in a landfill in Virginia after being... I want to say mutilated, but they won't go for that legally. A lot of media will be, oh, that's a little too harsh. But it is. They mutilated his body. I say desecrated it because they burnt him in a veterinarian cremation, okay? He wasn't even in like a human cremation place. So who else knows what was scooped up in that little, you know, bit? And then thrown in a landfill in Virginia. And I'm going, yeah. That's the way they treat us, and that's exactly the way they think about us as a community. And here's a simple fun fact, dude. If you go out in the national media right now and try and say, please don't overgeneralize the veteran community and stigmatize us as some kind of psychopathic rage machine, because that's the furthest thing from the truth. And here's the fun fact, again, if it was a black community, and again, these were both black men, one was in the Army, one was in the Marines, okay? If the black community were to be pointed out as much as the veteran community is, oh my goodness, President Obama would be talking some mess. All right? Loretta, if it was a Muslim, okay, Loretta Lynch would be going, oh, we're going to try this as a criminal case. Now, ask yourself this. If you're a veteran and you're a gay, black, Muslim, amputee, left-wing liberal that's about to vote for to Hillary Clinton, you aren't important to anybody except that left-wing, liberal, psychopathic Clinton, dude. It's weird. It's as if, I don't know, man, like if we hit a twilight zone where humanity's just, it looks over whatever they want to look over, and the new age bullies are these left-wing people that I guess either weren't loved as much as a kid or loved too much and were spoiled. And I don't mean to say left or right, because I'm actually neither. I'm more independent. But at that stroke, I'm going, that's legitimately our only choice right now. Because between Hillary or Trump, man, we're talking about idiots on both sides. And I don't mean it in a negative way, because Hillary Clinton has a long history, right? Donald Trump has a long history.
Right.
Whatever which way you want to understand both of them, that's your personal opinion. Now, if we were to look at it in actuality, do they have the quality of leadership to be able to launch a nuke? That's all I want anybody to answer. Do you think this individual has the moral fortitude and integrity to be able to understand what that means? Okay, not just say, oh, yeah, I can handle that shit. Understand what it means and hold it accountable. Hold yourself accountable. Hold the office accountable. Hold everyone. Because that's the job. The presidency isn't just to sit there and shake hands and play golf every other fucking weekend. It isn't there to create NAFTA, PAFTA, MIFTA, MUSA, MIFA, where you're literally raping the prosperity potential of the American people by subjugating the complete linearity of capitalism that has nothing to do with the United States anymore. It has everything to do with crony capitalism and outside investment. Well, guess what you're going to have left, homie? If somebody keeps coming in your garage and taking out your beer and without putting anything back, do you think you're going to have a six-pack when you come downstairs? No.
No, exactly.
You're going to be screwed up. You're going to be screwing the pooch, bro.
Yep. No, exactly, dude. I mean, I think it's the biggest thing I think that I want to convey in this conversation is that I think it's a tragedy that we don't have anybody who actually served running for office. I admired the attempt to get General Mattis to run. I know that there was attempts to get other military leaders to run. But I think it's a tragedy that this is what we've come to. Now, I know that there's going to be some people out there who are pissed off about this conversation, because whenever you talk about politics, you're going to piss off somebody. Whatever you're thinking out there, if you're listening to this podcast and you're a veteran, you know, share your thoughts. Tell us what you think, please, and put it out there in the comments. Because I think that regardless of what your political opinions are, if you picked up a weapon and you put on a uniform and you served this country, you need to be speaking your voice. And if you're pissed off, we want to hear it. We want you to be talking. We want you to be mobilized, because at the end of the day, all of us who have served have one big goal in our mind, unless you're an asshole, which is to help each other out and to make sure that all of our brothers and our sisters are getting the care that they need, are finding the places in society that they need to, that they should be in, and hearing their voices, getting their voices heard.
Heck yeah, dude. And that's exactly what needs to happen. I mean, here's the funnier part of not only President Obama's presidency, okay, but even George W. Bush's, both senior and junior, and also Bill Clinton. When you look at their history of debate and all the everything, when you look at the history of the United States, we have never grown from complete assimilation. We grow from argument, intriguement, discussion, and the most important part of an argument is never to denigrate, degrade, or minimize. It's always to educate and grow, because if that's not the point, all you're doing is being a mean asshole on either side, you know? And it doesn't matter, like you said perfectly, what the opinion is. If somebody says, dude, Hillary Clinton's the best because X, Y, and Z, bro, prove it. I will more than gladly listen. And I know you are the same way. Mm-hmm. And I know for the simple fun fact, bro, is if we're talking in that manner and everybody's open, just like we're open about football and soccer and baseball and golf, people get excited and people get mad. In fact, people sometimes kill each other over football games. So if we can't even calm down on that, I think we need to learn how to first calm down, articulate, and conversate, because that's all that needs to happen. Literally, all that ever needs to happen.
Exactly. That's something I think we're missing from American politics now. You know, 30, 40 years ago, congressmen from opposite sides of the aisle were actually meeting with each other. Politicians were working together, because it's not party ideology that gets things passed. It's not party ideology that makes things happen in this country. What makes things happen in this country are votes and policies, and those policies need to be passed. And in order for something to actually happen, in order for us to get something done in this great thing we call democracy, there needs to be some sort of cooperation. Now, that doesn't make me think that Hillary Clinton's any less of an idiot. That doesn't make me think that Donald Trump is any less of an idiot. But what it does make me believe is that, our other policymakers, our legislators, they really need to buckle down in the next 4 years, and they really need to be defending our rights. The job of congressman, the job of senator, has never been more important than it will be in the next 4 years, in my opinion.
Absolutely, and the same thing goes for the states. Okay, here's something I definitely want out on every show I ever take part on. It never has to become an apocalypse. It never has to become a degraded, absolute chaotic society. Never. Each state has its entire system as if it's its own nation. And we can fall back on each state governing in order to fix whatever problems we have on a national level. Now, here's the beautiful thing. All right, everybody's worried about all these, like crazy preppers, apocalypse crap, okay? The worst part about manifest destiny is if you have a self-fulfilling prophecy, it doesn't matter what the hell you're working for or trying to do. Right? If you're hyper-concentrated on fixing whatever it is, or you're fucking like, terrorism, or blah, 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 whatever it is, like I said, logotherapy, you're never going to figure it out. You're always going to overlook something simple that you should be looking at. And like we said, it's articulating and conversating. If we were to get people in these positional authoritative positions, that's redundant as hell, okay? But that's me. If we get people into as a governor, if we get them in as Congress or assemblyman, anybody that has a substantiated point of view or articulated voice should be and feel obligated to run for office either at the mayoral position locally, or even at a township, as a council member on Veterans Affairs. There's so many ways to get involved that it's disgusting that nobody's putting it out there. And that's what I really love about the new direction on our show, #VDTS. We're going to be doing a lot more nonprofit stuff and really helping people understand what's out there and how to get involved, what the subjects are that people want to be articulating, and how people articulate that, because we understand that not everybody as well-rounded, as well-knowledgeable as, you, Chris. You're a very, very smart young man, very, very great, motivated young person. Same with me. Great ambitions, right? But that's not everybody, and we have to help everyone. You know, there's a lot of guys out there in the special forces communities. There's a lot of guys out there with huge experiences and actually huge bankrolls, and they're not fundamentally doing the right thing by helping each other. They are maximizing their capital, okay? I'm not going to lie. That's always a good thing to focus on.
Absolutely.
Especially if you're an entrepreneur. However, if you are denigrating and minimizing the severity of our entire community by making or putting out, I wouldn't say garbage, but something that could be manifested by its entire community to empower everybody in the community. Maybe it won't be as high-end or as luxurious as somebody wants because they can't use whomever with billions of dollars, but what about giving that guy that just graduated from film school the shot of his life so he can go, yeah, you know what, I just got out of the military, and, you know, I'm being an assistant, not the director. Get him an assistant position, or get him something else. Get him an assistant audio underneath. There's so many ways to get people involved in not only the entertainment industry, which is very empowering, because if you have a voice and if you can read, you can definitely make it in the entertainment industry if you have the drive. And here's the best part about it, right? We offer that type of stuff. That's what I'm going to be doing a lot more of. And all this great thing, all this stuff, all this positional stuff, getting in office things, it's what needs to happen next.
Absolutely. And I want to let everybody know here, you have a talk show. It's called the Devil Doc Talk Show. Where can they find that? Where do they go?
Okay. It's on iTunes. Mm-hmm. At the Devil Doc Talk Show. And that's the Devil Doc Talk Show. And we're also on Podomatic. And we got Facebook, the Devil Doc Talk Show. Mm-hmm. And we're really popular on Twitter at Devil Doc Talk. And, you know, we greatly appreciate all the different likes, listens, and shares. We got a very diverse material. It's usually a little bit uncensored. Geared more towards humor, again, but very much so. We provide a very in-depth artistic look at what the experience of PTSD transitioning from the military is. I utilized a lot of my own personal experiences, sprinkled a little bit of artistic rendering, so I wouldn't take it so personal when people rejected it.
Did you guys conceptualize the flesh aesthetic, I think you called it?
Yes, sir.
Describe the flesh aesthetic so people can understand what that is.
Okay, so we developed this whole bit around Doc Jacobs' leg, you know, when we first started the show. And he pulled it off, and it looked kind of like the fleshlight assembly, you know, where it has this little, like, wiggly part, and then it has the fixated carbon part, and then the metal part. And we were like, you know, you could probably attach, like, a fleshthetic, a synthetic vagina. And we would be like, okay, hold on, like, so it's a fleshlight, right? Yes. But it's a prosthetic leg or arm or whatever. And out of nowhere, Jacobs looks at me and goes, you mean like a fleshthetic? I was like, yes, like a fleshthetic. And so what we're really trying to do is make jokes like that, you know, where people can say, hey, look at my leg. Not only my main ride, it is my only ride or whatever. You can get weird with it. It's fun. It's a way to get people to look at the amputations in a new light and make fun of either themselves or the situation and get over some loneliness and have a little chuckle with friends. The other thing was Eucerin. It's a daily suppository that's great for all the different irritations and uncomfortabilities of the bowels. So just behind that, what we did was mock it by a 50 caliber round, you know, the big 50 cal round, and the outer cartridge and the tip is like a foil wrapped shell. You got to pull it back and slide that thing in, and it'll ease the pain of your daily aggravations. So it's fun stuff. You know, we like to focus on the things that people aren't talking about, like VA budget, okay? We talk about things that people don't want to talk about, like how is it that if you're a straight Christian male, in a society that was founded by straight Christian males, you're like literally the worst treated human being if you openly discuss anything on any forum. Not necessarily in public, because ain't nobody about that real shit. They're all about this digital world and virtual reality. And as soon as you meet them in real life, there's some little punk that just won't throw a punch. And you're like, so you're there talking crap all day long on that little internet keyboard there, boy? And they're like, yeah. Dude, there's so many weird shits going on. But long story short, bro, everything's out there for us, and we simply have to go out there and get it.
Awesome, man. Awesome. And you're currently working on putting together, I think you talked about it a little bit earlier, putting together a 501c3 charity for, you know, where you're trying to impart your knowledge of production and recording and entertainment onto people. And on top of that, you're working on your own stand-up career, right? Comedy?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Working on it diligently, actually. I call myself the hardest working, non-presented, non-known, the most unknown, non-known comedian in the world. Because I write so much, dude, and it's really hard for me to, like, even put to words how much I write in, like, just a day about this random material, any material. But what I really like to bring is my personal flavor of obscurity and pure, absolute bewilderment and grace by looking at the world the way I do. I simply go, look at the beautifulness that's here, okay? And how can I make it not only funny, but make a good philosophical point and drive home something where we all can snort and go, that's funny. That didn't make me laugh. He was like, you remember when the earth was like created? It was kind of like the orgasms of the world, you know, but on a bigger scale where this big thing was like, boom, and life started. Funny. And people are like, dude, I don't know why, but if you talk about theoretical beginning of time, if you correlate that to some kind of intelligent thing and go, fart joke, people really like it now. I don't know why. And it's really fun, dude. I'm starting to work up my chops. I'm starting to go to local clubs, really having fun with it. I'm really trying to use it as a personal therapy. Jim Gaffigan said this on one of his videos. Stand-up comedy used to be the poor man's psych therapy or therapy. And I don't get any therapy from nobody. So I'm looking forward to getting my sessions out, bro.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
As far as your show, I actually think you interviewed the Super Troopers, did you not?
Yes, sir. We sure did. Last year, for 420, we were out in Denver. I was telling the consult discussion for the Marijuana Investor Summit there at the Crown Royal. Right there in Denver. Really amazing show. Got to meet a bunch of people, Sue Sisley, Matt Call, a bunch of different research scientists, investors in the whole cannabis industry. Very amazing people, all professional, cut clean cloth dudes. Really neat people. And then I got to go down to the High Times Cannabis Cup. I had a very, very great friend that hooked me up pretty well. I'm also a journalist, so I got to do the whole journalist route. The press kit, you know, really works well. If you're into journalism, if you want to get into journalism, make sure you look at how to get into these shows. You can definitely get your coverage in. I was graced to be able to set it up a little bit before time, you know, just through my networking and friends and stuff. And then just walked on in, man. Had to sit around for a little bit. They're doing a great meet and greet for their fans there. And I got to meet Steve Lemmy, Paul Soder, Kevin Heffernan, and Stolhansky. What's his? Eric Stolhansky. There we go. And have a great conversation about both the veteran community comedy and their great success on the Indiegogo website. Their fundraiser that they got to launch and pretty much was the only reason why there's going to be a Super Troopers 2. We got some great laughs, actually, talking about how sweet Steve Lemmy to ask my Tang, sweeter than Tang. Yeah, that was funny. Got to hit up them a little bit later for their beginning of the shoot of Super Troopers 2. And so whenever that's been wrapping up, I'm hoping to hook up a nice little premiere episode of going in and either saying howdy again and, you know, watching the movie, man. It's really, really awesome. Fun and exciting and, you know, getting to meet somebody or just people in the industry that are, one, influential, and two, about art and not necessarily just money, is very enriching, okay? It's very enriching to meet artists that aren't simply there to make money, all right? And they do a great show. It's called Chewing It Podcast, actually, with Kevin Heffernan and Steve Lemmy. They also do stand-up and a bunch of other stuff. I think Eric's going around doing motivational speaking now, consult, stuff like that. And the same type of energy that they have was really reflecting. And I told them about the show. They loved the show. Everybody was, oh, yeah, man, Devil Dog Talk Show. Fucking sweet. Fuck yeah.
Awesome.
And we got to actually record the video of it all. And that's on our YouTube channel, the Devil Dog Talk Show on YouTube. You just look it up there. And we also got the Tony Perez episode on YouTube as well, of OGO's Operation Game On. and I'm really working hard on trying to get a little bit more video done.
That's cool.
And getting people into contact with these type of opportunities, not just necessarily for myself, but like I was telling you, we're expanding the show. We're doing a 501(c) nonprofit production studio. We're going to be doing mentoring, consulting. We're going to be making up a facility where people can come in and produce either their podcast, YouTube channel, with professional grade resources. Make sure that they're learning a good skill asset that could either help them not only professionalize their show, monetize their show, or give them a skill asset to take to another field or production aspect of any art, whether it be podcasting, video, audio engineering is my personal favorite, whether it be writing, set design. We're trying to get makeup artists, that type of program stuff going too. Anything in the entertainment industry, we're really trying to set up and have it localized in just about every town near you. Whether we're in the major cities, we're really trying to expand first locally here, create a digital online program where you could learn the skill set, come in, get what you need to do hands-on like a lab, move forward with whatever production you're trying to get out, or if you're just a veteran trying to get a story out, we want to teach you how to protect yourself legally. There's a lot of veterans out there that don't understand the law on entertainment and how to protect your rights, both intellectual, art, and representative rights, meaning if you are a public figure of something and, say, CNN, Fox News, or somebody invites you on air and you just do it because you're kind. Well, that's nice, but they're going to manipulate the shit out of that video as well as that audio. So we want to make sure people at least understand the fundamentals of contracting, of seeking entertainment opportunities such as consulting people for the news expert panels. We're actually building up our expert panels for the Delta Doc Talk Show, which is beginning, of course, you, Chris Albert, on nutrition and physical fitness, and Ryan Hammer and on political and business aspects. We got another guy I'm looking at as far as the industry goes to come in and talk about just basic 1, 2, 3 of production, beginning, middle, and end, okay? But on a way where you're not going to be able to just do podcasts. You can do movies. You can do freaking anything the way this guy explains it, man. You can do a 12-piece band in 3 hours, okay? And it would normally take 2 days of recording. And this guy will streamline it to the point where you're going, man, we got a lot of budget left. Thank you.
Yeah, dude.
Because that's really, really important in the industry. When you get involved in production, you don't ever want to have a piece of equipment in your garage or in your locker that's not making you money. You don't ever want to be making more steps than what's needed. It's always streamlined, always expert professionalism, and that's what we're trying to bring to our veterans and our civilian community in an empowering and entertaining way. We're starting to do the stand-up like we told you, really busting my ass on writing that junk and just trying to get the confidence up to actually go up and talk to people. Even though I used to do that, you know, public speaking and actual other subjects, but the material is, it's a little bit hard to digest for some people. I've noticed that. Like when you talk about mental illnesses or any kind of thing that's going on in society, people usually don't want to laugh about it. And I'm going, well, you know, the greats used to actually poke at the exact stuff that people say don't make fun of.
Yeah.
You know, the great comedians, Robin Williams, Eddie Murphy, you name it, man. The way that they learned and utilized tragedy in order to create positivity is exactly what I really want to do and bring to our community as a whole.
That's awesome. Dude, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. I want to thank you so much for everything you do and for, you know, being there for this community, for being the person you are, and for researching everything that you're researching right now. I think it's absolutely awesome. And, you know, anybody who's listening to this, you definitely got to go out go over and check out Devil Doc Talk Show. They've got some great stuff over there, including an interview with myself. So,
yeah, dude, I thoroughly enjoyed that interview. It was very, very, very awesome just to kind of conversate and really discuss, like, you know, the background, the history, the drive, and really get on, you know, your great program, dude. Like, I cannot thank you enough for, you know, let me be a part of it all and taking your time to catch up, keep me motivated, and definitely losing the weight, man. I'm actually looking pretty damn fit, and I'm feeling good, you know, emotionally, I should say. Physically, always in pain, which sucks, dude. But here's the best part about it. When you have a better outlook in life, and like you were talking about, you know, the whole hormone balance thing, when you have a balanced hormones, when you have a better outlook in life, pain is manageable, even if it's horrible, because you're looking at it as, dude, I can get through this because I'm going to be able to, excuse my French here, but, you know, have some good sex with my wife, hopefully, you know, or, hey, I'm going to be able to finally go out and enjoy some beers with my friends instead of being isolated and depressed, or, hey, I'm actually going to be able to feel motivated in order to move forward on this grand concept and idea. And that's that thing, dude, that I always find very empowering and very motivational, is that you really gave me a tool set back that I kind of left in a garage, and you helped me rediscover it, dust off the dang freaking thing. Yeah, I can't use the power tools yet, but hey, I got to get my skill set back, work on my technique, and really drive home the physical therapy, the transcendental meditation behind it, and seeking bliss and happiness through the journey and not at its fundamental location. Meaning, I don't want people to ever point a goal out and go, if I don't ever get that, it's going to be the end of my life. Because it's not. Because not getting something could very much be the best thing of your life. And I mean that dearly. Sometimes we get these wonderful ideas and emotional states that we get this foolish optimism and want to flee and fight and do all this wonderful stuff, right? But if we don't take the time to preserve our facility, our mental capability, our cognitive wonders, all that great stuff, if we don't take care of our bodies, our spirit, our souls, if we don't take care of our family, it won't be there. The same way if we don't take care of our nation, our leaderships don't take care of us, if we don't take care of our leaders, it won't be there, right? We have to unify, unite, and carry on and just simply do great things, dude. I really think, you know, all our conversation today was really wonderful. And even like on the movie aspect of those guys and what they're doing, you know, I really hope one day that we all get to work together in this wonderful concept and idea that we both got. Seems like we're both working towards. But if not, you know, I really hope it doesn't slow either of us down. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because I've seen that a lot too in the industry right now, both in the entertainment and veteran community. I see a lot of divisiveness, and I don't like it. What I do like is having the conversation about it and then unifying regardless.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. It's all about unity, and it's all about freedom. And
yes, sir.
Seeing to our own freedom and making sure that we're living the lives we can be living. Because if not, and we're not vigilant about that, then we're putting ourselves in chains. So everybody out there, I want to thank you all for listening to this. If we piss some of you off, please let us know. Talk to us. We're not some assholes who aren't going to respond or going to just, you know, disagree with you for the hell of it. We want to hear what you guys have to say. We want to hear your voices. So with that, to everybody out there, have a great day, a great weekend, whenever you're listening to this, and I will talk to you soon.